I walk past and all the penises in the land just go flaccid.
I mean, I'd rather cry in a Ferrari than a Datsun.
Nearly Beloved, we are gathered here today to celebrate and wiggle around in the bin juice that is Australian reality TV's Married at First Sight. My name's Lucy May, I'll be your MC for these proceedings. And first things first, we're recording this on Wurundjeri land. The patron saint of this podcast is Kieran Stott of Angie's Bachelorette season. And I did manage to convince someone to be a co-host on this. When it comes to this co-host, I know her as one of my favourite mum friends. You might know her as a writer for various outlets, a NPF, noted public feminist, creator of Cherchez la Femme, and just all-round freaking legend, Karen Pickering.
Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for inviting me to come and swim in the bin.
You're very, very welcome. I should say here that I'm a pathetic long-term viewer of MAFS and other dating shows. Karen has decided to dip her toe into the swamp.
You've convinced me that it's a worthwhile social experiment.
The way to spend your time.
And it does seem as though dating shows are not immune to spontaneous outbursts of feminism, as we've seen in the last couple of years, or as I've picked up from the Punky and Junky recaps.
Yes.
It's not like I have any pretensions to, like, highbrow viewing.
Well, you've come to the right place.
But I just have never, I guess I've just never, the reality shows that I have watched have been like Drag Race, yeah, and, you know, more like competitions.
Yes.
Of skills.
Skills. When you put it like that, Karen.
But like I said, you're very persuasive.
Thank you.
And you did make it seem as though I would be able to challenge some of my ideas of why people watch these shows. And look, like, I'm like everyone, you know, I watch these shows and they pull all the strings, and we'll talk about that.
Yes, tonight. Well, there was, I will say, a fair amount of squealing that we did during this episode. There was also a lot of, like, neck pulling around, like, tightening the collar around the neck.
There were some furrowed brows.
Yes, there was also a little of, on your part, open mouth staring.
There was a fair bit of OMG face.
I have this really uneasy mix of feelings when I watch these shows, because I do genuinely get interested in them. I'm genuinely excited to watch them. I do get little thrills when you get those rare moments of sunshine. And I think it is because I am a pretty tragic romantic, and romantic in the damaged sense of the word culturally. Yeah, just grew up reading a whole lot of terrible Regency England romance novels with very questionable consent issues and a Sweet Valley High. And, I mean, we talked about Dirty Dancing, and that's still, I'm sure it's problematic in some ways given he's a grown man, but he was also Patrick Swayze. And yeah, those hips.
And romance is like I said to you, I love watching rom-coms.
Yeah.
And I love watching romance as a genre. I lean all the way into the fact that it's supposedly just for me.
Mm.
Because I think and I wrote an article about this, about A Star Is Born.
Yes.
That for me, falling in love, connecting with someone, and watching that unfold in all its tragedy and majesty and, you know, as you said, all the thrills on the big screen or in a novel is exciting, and it's also human. Mm. It's like what human beings do, you know, seek connection, seek collaboration, seek communion and love. And so however flawed our ways of trying to find this are, like using Tinder.
Yeah.
I think it's like, it's a noble pursuit. I was interested in my experiment of watching a dating show when I live, eat, sleep, and breathe feminist
theory
and all
critical thinking.
Yeah, exactly. So how would I reconcile, as you mentioned, how would I reconcile the fact that I there's one part of my brain that's like, this is outrageous. Mm-hmm. This is a nonsense.
And the other part's like,
Yeah, the other part is like, because I'm a human being.
Yeah. Let's start where we need to start. That Michael guy is trash.
Okay, so differentiating. So there's Michael and Mikey.
Yes.
And they're both trash.
Well, no. No,
they're different kinds of trash. They're different kinds.
Michael is the guy with the watches who had the immortal, I'd rather cry in a Ferrari than a Datsun quote, which you just, I felt, you just lift off your chair.
That was.
But it was pretty good.
That was the moment I decided I was in. I was in. Yeah.
And that show was within, I think, about 25 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he is the, I don't know, entrepreneur. He's the villain. Yeah, he's, yes. And he's just a massive wanker. Mikey, actually, one thing that we did see from him was when Michael was going on about, oh, well, you just want to pash the girl, you know, kiss the girl. Mm. You better want to kiss her when you see her at the bloody altar. And you just do it. And Mikey, actually, a lot of the men were visibly uncomfortable with that man bun, the bun guy, the oldest English guy. They were kind of uncomfortable. And Mikey actually said, well, doesn't it depend on her?
Mm.
And I actually thought that was fairly decent. The reason we've started off thinking that we don't like Mikey is that he said, as part of his description of himself in a 1 minute promo video, that he went to boarding school, which I felt at 27, perhaps you can let go that part of your identity, your self-concept.
Because he kind of wanted to tell us that he went, that you live on the North Shore. It shows that you're on a boat. Okay.
That's right. He's drinking a beer on a boat.
You get the message. You're rich. Yeah. Okay.
So Mikey is unconfirmed. Michael, 100% a monster. Mikey, unconfirmed. Right. Who else did we talk about? Oh, Connie.
Connie, right.
She broke our hearts.
So Connie's the first person to appear in the Maths universe that I genuinely fell in love with.
To be fair, she was the third person that you saw in the Maths universe.
No, I watched all the clips. I did my homework. Okay. Lucy sent me some homework of watching like 58,000 introduction clips.
The links kept coming.
The links. And yeah, so Connie, obviously, like the producers are framing her as the kind of victim. If Michael's getting the villain edit, she's getting the victim edit. And obviously it would be amazing if they get matched up and she turns out to be terrible. No. But he was like, the way that he was a villain seemed like so innate to him. Mm. Whereas like the storyline that she's getting.
Circumstantial with Connie, maybe that she has had a bad run or something. So she's the girl who was sadly staring and saying, you know, I'm unlovable or that sort of thing. And it was interesting, though, because I think you're right in that the editing had something to do with it, because she, in that video to the producers, she was quite extreme in that direction. And then when she actually entered the villa, but that's the villa. I've just been watching Love Island UK.
I think you mean when she entered the hens party.
She was quite bubbly and seemed really sweet. So I think maybe that had been like they probably had her in there for like 12 hours under bright light. Are you sad, Connie? How sad are you?
It was like the 16th time they asked her, why are you unlovable? And she finally broke.
Times. I really liked her dress at the party. And also she has a massively mean mum. Also, we think that Connie is currently best in show.
Yeah. Still? Connie's definitely like the one who seems the most beautiful and intelligent and amazing and hard done by.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, we get this horrible, again, like illuminating in terms of if Connie is as sad as she appears.
You know why.
Maybe it's because her mom is diabolical.
Yeah. So moving on, Steve is an older guy with grey hair. He's English. He's quite well put together. He has been on at least one other dating show before. I can't remember the name of it because I haven't watched it. So he's a professional dating
contestant.
And it's funny because in his promo video, one of the questions that they ask all of them is, what else have you done to find love? And he's, been on blind dates, been, you know, set up with people, been on the apps and everything. Notably does not say, I've also been a contestant on another dating show.
At which I clearly failed to find love.
Anyway, he's back. Steve's back.
At least all the others said, well, everyone, oh, yeah, eyes.
See, I prefer that. Well, except Michelle says wrists.
I love or the woman who says, wrists. Back muscles make me believe in God.
Yeah.
Steve actually did look uncomfortable at Michael being such a boorish pig.
Yeah.
And so that seemed promising.
Yes.
And so man bun, Mikey, and old English Steve.
And also Josh, the guy who we ended up thinking was a sweetheart tonight. He also looked a bit...
Askance.
Is this guy? Yeah. On Chris, I think we're going to get to...
Yeah, Chris is a little bit of a blank slate at the moment.
He is blank.
he's like attractive.
Yeah.
Well-spoken, tan,
muscly,
square, shaped, fine. Yeah, there's nothing about him that pisses me off yet.
No, he seems like a perfectly fine guy. All right.
So he's the best so far because he's average.
Blank.
Right.
Yeah. Good. Hayley, she was the one who from our perspective, 30 seconds of being at this hen's party, other women were asking her to be quiet so that other people could talk.
Yeah, Hayley was a lot. She was a lot, but also, yeah, they kind of shut her down really quickly. Was she the one who said she liked bodybuilding?
Yes.
Right. Mm. Yeah, I liked her. She was good. Mm. She had very powerful aura.
Yeah. Okay, that's how you...
Is that...
No, she...
I don't mean because she looks like she could bench me.
I mean, I was... just widening my eyes because, yes, I think that she has a powerful aura in that she sucks the oxygen out of a room.
I thought you were, like, annoyed at the other women for silencing her.
No, see, I'm just more that pointing they were just out,
like, we've had enough of you. We want to talk to someone else.
And then I think that you'd have to work pretty hard in an entirely new group of people for a stranger sitting next to you to say, okay, someone else needs to talk now.
Although, but maybe that stranger's really mean and rude.
But it was...
Which we don't really know yet.
We don't. Okay.
But we'll see. Right. I mean, this could we'll be another, like... That. Yeah, we'll put... Yep.
So I'm calling Hayley...
All will be revealed.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
I think Hayley's a strong personality.
Yes.
We can put it that way.
I think we...
And she knows what she wants. And that kind of makes me dig her.
Yeah, okay.
You know.
Yeah, I was about to say horny, but...
Well...
Yeah, you know.
Call Hayley. Yeah.
So Vanessa... we just found out, dated Bronson from last season of Maths. So he was this really solid, nice guy who was paired with this tiny, cranky nightmare human called Innes, who was actually very entertaining TV. But you wouldn't want to turn around and she was at the altar. She was attractive physically, but inside just blackened. But... No, she was actually, I think she's someone who maybe is quite hurt inside and so hurt people hurt people.
Right.
But she famously cheated on Bronson with with another husband.
Someone else's
in Mass,
husband on the show.
Elizabeth, the woman Lizzie, who's coming back from last season.
Oh, yeah. The circle closes.
Yes. Slam shut and you will never escape. Vanessa... I thought was cool. I thought she had quite I enjoyed her.
She seemed like a bit of a character and she obviously didn't mind like making fun of herself and
yeah.
So she seemed
which I like.
Charming.
Yes.
Yeah.
And whether or not that veers off into delightful or the opposite of delightful, we'll find out. Tash, I liked Tash. So she is
who
the
is
bartender.
She? South Australian.
Yes. And she was the one who said that she had felt really nervous about saying to the hens group, well, I'm not going to be here to meet a guy because I'm gay. She was really pleasantly surprised. She didn't feel any judgment. And there weren't any cutaways to
a double bride wedding, same sex wedding, but they seemed kind of unfazed.
Yeah.
But they all kind of just went, oh, switch gears. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which
I
was
liked
nice.
It too. Ivan. Very Ivan. Ivan.
I think you'll find it's pronounced.
Yes, actually. Which is fair enough.
He did say it 48 times.
Ivan describes himself as someone who's been labelled very opinionated.
Obnoxious, I think, was the word that he used.
Right.
Which is a strange admission.
Tickled by that.
Ivan seemed, he was almost like the surprise package.
Yes, I was pleasantly surprised as well.
Yeah, we thought he would be like a massive douche canoe. Sorry, Ivan, if you're listening.
Yeah.
But you'll be pleased to know that after a few minutes, we were like, this guy,
he's all right.
Pretty cool. Yeah, so we have no real idea about Ivan, except for he obviously has expensive tastes.
Yeah.
He has an awareness of whatever he believes his level of handsomeness is.
What did he say about handsomeness?
Well, like that he said something in his clip, his intro clip, like, despite my appearance, I don't always feel as though I'm very good looking or something like this.
I must have had a micro sleep or something during that section because I don't remember that. But
it was an odd thing to say. But yeah, so he's an odd one.
And also just general Australianisms, accurate or inaccurate. Holy dooly. Which my only complaint about Angie from Bachelorette, her season, is that holy dooly is not the expression. It's hooly dooly.
I back it in. I back in holy dooly as just entered usage.
As,
it's just good enough for Angie. It's good enough for me.
And that is fair enough.
So, yeah, Ivan, maybe he could be the dark horse. He could be the guy who seems like he's going to be a real
heart of gold.
Yeah, and turn out to actually be, like, a good dude. At the Bucks party, he was not having a bar of the sexist
wanker bullshit. Michael.
And so that was pretty cool, I thought. So we'll see.
Now, Karen, you described this show as
Black Mirror meets Perfect Match. Yeah. There are obviously some post-apocalyptic elements in maps where you kind of think, or is like this what we've been reduced to?
Pre-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
Peri-apocalyptic.
This is where we are as a species, that we want to find connection and communion and love, and we've burned through the apps. We've burned through the dating agencies of ye old. We've burned through Dexter the robot on Perfect Match, and now we're like, let TV producers handle it. But I mentioned Perfect Match because you and I both loved it when we were kids.
Mm.
And I think that's decisive, that it was like in its heyday when we were in primary school and we watched it. I watched in between like cartoons.
Yeah, and Hey Hey It's Saturday.
Like Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Just a sneaky little episode of Perfect Match. And so obviously it was like, what? Adults did, you know, like they wore makeup and they got to meet like cute guys. You got chosen, you could go on a holiday to Magnetic Island. Fine.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, so it kind of does fit into these like really insidious things like being on the shelf or being, you know, chosen or having to kind of make it work so that you don't have to be the dreaded singleton.
And that's where the Perfect Match feeling feels the similar to for me at the beginning of MAPS. And there's that moment of, oh, are they going to smile with their eyes or are they going to do a like teeth smile? Is it going to be this way or is it going to be this way? And I think that you can tell right from the beginning usually what it's going to be like.
Which in a way is also the decisive moment in like romantic films or whatever. It's like eyes meet across a room, they lock, they, you know, see their future together in that moment, and which we know. And it's good actually that some of the contestants have said, no, don't believe in love at first sight.
That's true.
Bonkers. And I just believe that this is an opportunity for me to meet someone who maybe I'll fall in love with.
Karen, you had a couple of comments about the experts, the relationship experts who choose these
I don't accept your terminology.
And what, experts?
Experts. I think that they are clearly charlatans. who, if they were genuinely relationship experts, which then they wouldn't touch this with a 40-foot pole, would they?
Well,
they're obviously... Yeah,
no, surely not.
Yeah, charlatans. So I was calling them cereal box charlatans.
Cereal box charlatans.
Because they obviously got their qualifications on the back of a cereal box. And they're, like, even including Michael, I think that the cereal box charlatans are my least favourite people on the show.
Yeah.
They've just got this, like... Like, they speak as though what they're saying is real. Can't stand them. They're the worst. Guy, the man's the worst.
The man is the worst. He is the worst. He does... He does look like he put his stubble on with a burnt cork. Okay, so we had Poppy and Luke getting ready.
Mm-hmm.
Poppy was smashing Jim Beam mix in a wine glass, which... Fair play.
So we liked the Poppy and Luke pairing because yes. They were both single parents. She seemed so, for all of her kind of gung-ho rehearsed comedy.
About the tragic end of her marriage,
yeah.
Which was the line that her husband had a terrible accident when her twins were 6 weeks old. He tripped and fell into the vagina of a co-worker and is there to this day.
And he's still stuck there.
Delivered in this...
With actual tears.
Yeah. But, yeah, a joke. So the drawn-out lead-in to the joke was with tears, and then the punchline came, and I came laughed, and went, but you were just aghast.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of... I thought she was cutting a really tragic figure at that point.
Yeah.
That it was like, oh, you've got a shtick to...
Explain.
Lessen the humiliation and the sadness. And then this guy who, of all the men that we've met so far, taken at face value, we think seems very decent.
A decent man. That decent was the word in my mind too.
And quite sort of gentle and soft and not a kind of alpha male aggro type like some of the others were.
And quite empathetic
too. So we kind of thought, this seems like a nice... Match.
Well done, experts.
Yeah.
Then things were lovely at the beginning of the ceremony. They were beaming at each other. Her friend said, I love him to the other bridesmaid. He was so excited. Apparently he's a Scorpio. Not both of us, we didn't believe that. He was 100% a Taurus. Just, don't at me, Scorpios.
So he's obviously thrilled.
He's thrilled. There's and he sees this
beautiful woman.
And they seemed, they were laughing. There really did seem to be this oxytocin cloud. Hat tip Yvonne for mentioning oxytocin and how you shouldn't kiss each other when you first meet because your judgment will be clouded by the oxytocin.
So there was this sense of like optimism.
Yeah, it felt lovely. Initially. And I was punching you on the arm and saying, see, this is why I watch it. See, this is why.
And then
record scratch. And Poppy went off the rails.
And then I was like, see?
Yeah.
See?
And so Poppy just got really upset. Ostensibly, she was saying it because she felt guilty because she'd left her children, which, I understand. Sure, I felt guilty when I left my child crying tonight to come and do this podcast. But
not guilty enough.
he's fine. I got a message 5 minutes later saying he's fine.
Even though we're laughing, we are empathetic about Poppy feeling torn.
And genuinely feeling, am I doing the right thing?
But it did seem, A, so sudden, and B, such a strong 180 for her to be, like, excited and happy, and then the next minute kind of throwing herself into this hair shirt of, like, self-flagellation. Just, like, I'm a bad mom. And
malfunctioning. It was sort of like, And I felt, and you... I shared this wisdom with you that it felt very like last season there was a couple called Mark and Ning. And Ning, I think, was also a single mom, and she and Mark was this really, energy-wise, maybe fairly similar to Luke, just a kind of nice, decent guy. And she was a lovely woman, though she right from the beginning was just super tense and... after the wedding and was clearly having all of these jitters. And I think in both cases that maybe it was that they realized they weren't they didn't feel physical chemistry with them, with the husband. And then that sort of made them get that pit in the stomach, which we talked about sometimes you get when you met up with a Tinder person and realize, oh, you're as Love Island people always say, 100% my type on paper. But yeah, that's the
then
vibe.
You get there and you're like, you're nah, like I don't no, want to go to bed. I can't. This
yeah. So,
Maybe that's it. But also maybe she's done this very weird thing and then, you know, get fake married to someone she's never met. And then she, as she said, the reality of it sort of came crashing down on her. She also kind of made a thing about, you know, getting pretty pierced.
That's true. She had six Jim Beams that morning.
And so it was a kind of, you know, maybe she just was like sobering up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I felt this weird combination of real empathy for her and feeling really sorry for her and also just wanting her to snap out of it.
I think at some point we said, pull yourself together, puppy, because I felt terrible for the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, for Luke.
And so he obviously was humiliated. Yeah. And he felt, and yes, they've both signed up to do this crazy thing. And then it's kind of like they're both holding this, you know, insane glass sphere.
Yeah.
And then she kind of drops her side of it. And he's just like, what? Ugh. I kind of thought.
And how do you recover from that?
Are you really just regretting going on this show and it doesn't matter who I am? Mm. Or is it that
Or is it me?
Is it me?
Mm.
And so it's like, that's the thing that's so, like, watching the show, I get why people like it. Mm. Because it's like this extreme manufactured version of, like, the real human drama of falling in love.
Mm. Yes.
Which people can't get enough of.
Mm.
For good reason, but it's like a kind of, obviously it's like a pantomime that we're watching where we're like, look behind you, you know.
How excruciating was that when they were sitting at the table at the reception with the sort of turned away from each other and she's just got tears coming down her face. She's just like necking a glass of champagne and he's just hoeing into whatever steak.
People, I'm sure there's some people who don't like this show because they're like, it's making a mockery of the institution of marriage. And I'm like,
we've made a mockery of that already.
Like, yeah. But I do feel a kind of referred duty of care where I worry that, you know, even if it's just getting married, it's more the spectacle of what they're sharing with, like, millions of people.
Yeah.
You just wonder if they're going to be okay.
I guess we'll find out when we watch the rest of the season. Karen's doing a face. The second wedding was Josh and Kathy, and this was much less excruciating than
Good news,
Luke
sorry.
And
yeah.
Poppy.
Yeah.
They
pretty much shorthanded as, like, it was a successful union.
Yes, a successful union, eyebrows, of, yes, two young, fresh whippersnappers. Bloody ripper, hooly, dooly, true blue, fair dinkum, as Josh would say.
Flaming hell houses.
Flaming, he said something else insane that I'll find later, but hook, line, and bloody sinker. This guy is 27 years old. He talks like, I don't know.
A Leyland brother.
Yeah. Exactly.
He talks like Crocodile Dundee.
They both thought the other was very attractive. He's this kind of brown-haired, blue-eyed, twinkly smile, crop beard guy. She's this beautiful, long-haired... Well, you had some thoughts.
She's the Instagram beautiful.
Yeah, she's one of the Instagram beautifuls.
Like the Gia Tolentino vibe that she's, like, kind of... in. She's obviously done lots of stuff to herself to kind of conform to these... you know, ideals of beauty, but but the thing that, like, she's very attractive and gorgeous and sexy, but kind of, like I said to you, the thing that makes her sexy is
her
nothing to do with her
personality. Yeah, yeah, she seems like a really awesome
she seems
person.
Like a real cack.
That's true. She seems
and like a real
cack.
And like just like a real goer.
Yeah,
you know? Like
I would really like to have a drink with her.
Yeah,
I think that Kathy is gorgeous, and I would also like to hang out with her.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I've got my own complicated feelings about, you know, that come from, like, partly my feminist identity and partly even just becoming a mum now, I feel even more like protective of young people.
Yeah.
And so I look at young people and all the stuff that they do to their face and body, and I think you don't even realize how incredibly beautiful you are without doing all this stuff to yourself. But that's my shit, and I don't want to like get into, you know, commenting on women's appearance.
Well, especially I think because Kathy said that clearly that is something she's concerned about, whether her partner will be attracted to her.
Yeah. So that was kind of in the psychological profile done by the serial box charlatans. They identified that as this kind of sore point or this weakness.
She needs to know that her partner is attracted to her.
She feels suspicious that male partners, prospective partners don't find her attractive. And so that obviously seems absurd because she's so
objectively pretty. Yeah.
And she also is beautiful in these ways that are very recognizable to the rest of society. And yet she's still
worried. And she did say that that was also because she'd been cheated on too, which,
And she related the story.
She told Josh that, and he said something really sweet, like, "Oh, why would you do that? What a loser.
What a dickhead."
About the guy. And that's exactly what Kathy needs to hear. Yeah. That it is. What a loser. The guy
said what
she needed to hear.
Yeah.
And I really liked that.
And she told the story also of being on a date with someone.
Oh, who was then on Tinder in front of her. Who then
went on Tinder in front of her, unmatched with her, and started talking to the next Tinder date.
That stings.
But I think so many women are going to watch that and be like, I've had some version of that, because obviously the app world, and like, this is like why people have gone and married with children, married at first sight.
Is that's the next season.
Because they're on the apps and finding that it's excruciating.
Yeah, that it's terrifying.
And that just about everyone I know who's ever used apps, which is now as we get, within certain age groups, is like pretty much everyone.
Yes.
And everyone agrees they're terrible and they make you feel like shit, and they don't kind of produce the results you're after, and they have totally distorted how people meet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, that her relating that story, I think a lot of women are going to go, Yep. I pretty much have
been there.
I feel you like, you're my gal. Yeah. You know? And so that was kind of a good thing, I think, for her to tell the truth about that, and that maybe other people will see and go, but she's so beautiful, and then maybe they'll think that about themselves.
Yes. So you see, MAFS is a public service.
I hope that they like that she doesn't try to be smaller and more dainty and
less
more
Kathy. We want more Kathy.
Yeah, I hope that they take that from it, not that she's validated by Josh saying he's attracted to her, which he obviously does validate her by saying that. But I think, I hope people go, she kind of likes who she is, and her vows.
Yes.
Where she said,
I want a partner who reflects the characteristics that I like about myself.
Yeah, that I'm most proud of
in myself. I liked that too.
And she was like, honesty, integrity. And I thought, fucking
exactly.
Some self-love.
So she can marry herself, like Josh wanted to marry her because she was, quote, me in a wig.
Josh.
Anyway, I thought he was funny. Right. Josh
has a charm.
Yes, I liked him. The last part of the show, we were treated to a delightful vignette in Luke and Poppy's bedroom, where without an ounce of chemistry, they fought over which side of the bed, play fought, but really they were fighting over who was going to sleep on which side of the bed. And you commented that the lighting in there was like
the 7-Eleven
at 3 a.m.
At 3 a.m. when you come out of the bar, you're just plastered, and you go into the 7-Eleven because you need like a sausage roll or
back in the day a pack of ciggies before they were $39.
Yeah. Yes. Pack of Stivos.
Oh, God.
And the lights are, like, getting an x-ray.
Yeah.
And that was, like, the mood lighting for their honeymoon.
And that was 100% the producers trolling them, because when we then cut to Josh and Kathy, they had this, like,
but maybe Josh and Kathy went in and were like,
they turned down the dimmer. Maybe they had an ounce of sense between them, because
or maybe, let's face it, Josh and Kathy were like, we're gonna get busy tonight.
Yeah, so you might want to turn it down.
So I don't want the strip lighting on. Whereas, like, maybe Poppy was like, right, turn on the lights.
Every single light in here, can we get them up, up, up? But then, anyway.
So for people who haven't seen the episode yet, basically the very last few scenes are, like, extremely unpleasant for the viewer, because it's sort of like, boom, chicka, boom. Yeah. Like, ooh, they weren't they? Lights out.
Well, sorry. No, because when Josh and Kathy were pashing after Josh said that he was crushing on her heart and told her exactly what she needed, which was, I'm very attracted to you, and they were pashing, and you were complaining that the camera angles were not showing enough tongue.
Oh, yeah. I'm saying that the final scenes didn't have enough sex in them. I'm not saying that they're... What?
The opposite.
Why do you think you wanted more? Show?
Yeah. Why do you think I'm watching a show at 7:30 p.m. on Channel 9?
That's called Married at First Sight.
It's not SBS World Movies on a Friday night.
Look, I have seen enough recaps of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette.
You want to get that?
And so I really need to see that. I don't want to see, like, backs of heads.
See, I prefer that, and I especially prefer... See, this is the Regency England romance novels.
Is what you're saying.
No, I don't like... Well, look. I was going to say, I don't like seeing tongue. I 100% don't like hearing the... unless it's Kieran and Angie.
La, 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 la.
Yeah. The punky.
I love seeing tongue, and that's because but one good of my tongue. Formative sexual experiences is the... sex scene in Top Gun.
Oh my God, yes, the string of spit.
Yeah, but the tongue.
But like hot. Yeah.
The tongue. Just
also,
like,
Youngblood with Rob Lowe.
Going in.
There's a very... my mind... you've been watching ER. My mind just went flatline as I started to think about young Rob Lowe.
No, clear! Yeah. 360!
Yeah. Young Rob Lowe in Youngblood, there's a real raunchy is the word.
I think the 80s, because we were talking about the 80s. Formative. Had a lot of tongue. Dirty Dancing has tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, when it's, I'm of the opinion, when it's good, it's great. And when it's anything less than good, like okay to middling to bad, that's all bad. I don't want to see tongue unless it is top notch.
I'll take any tongue. I really...
All right. Well, we'll see if the producers will come good for you.
I think they will. I have faith. I think there's going to be a bit more as the series progresses.
All right. Well, you want a bit of that. I would like to see more of Kathy in that bunny dressing gown. I thought that was pretty sweet.
You've come in and you're absolutely packing it up.
I'm nervous about the wedding. I think so.
There's that bloody turnaround. Holy demon. Yeah. Oh, goosebumps.
You can ask us to marry you at nearly_beloved on Twitter, at nearlybelovedpodcast on Insta, and nearlybelovedpodcast@gmail.com.
I am absolutely shitting myself.
I now pronounce this podcast finished.